Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Visit betterhelp.com/positive to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/positive.
Hey, is that the new iPhone 15 Pro?
Yeah, it's made with titanium and the Pro camera is epic. Just got it at T-Mobile.
Nice.
Yep, and I got their Go 5G Next plan, so now I have the freedom to upgrade my phone every year.
Whoa, I gotta get to T-Mobile.
Get our best deals on iPhone 15 Pro at T-Mobile.com.
One-year upgrade requires Go 5G Next plan, financing new qualifying device, and upgrading in good condition after 6 months with half paid off.
You know me, I like to label and name and brand elements of the show. I dubbed October the fulcrum in sports because it's catchy and it's true. October is the month around which every other month in the sports world revolves. It is the busiest month of the year in sports and sports broadcasting. And so often when I've gone a week or longer without responding to text messages or emails, that's my fallback. I'm so sorry. October is absolute chaos. And it is. It really is. Even Monday, trying to recover from the NFL Sunday and the college football Saturday, just a football weekend. And boom, not even 2 hours after I wake up, and I had to get up earlier today, but it's right back into games that require attention and require watching, taking notes, following what's happening, and then to go through Monday Night Football and a Game 7. I mean, again, this was me for 3 hours. I am watching football. When it gets to a break, I flip over to baseball. I rewind it back to the last point at which I saw. Watch it through until it catches up, until I catch up on the DVR, and then go back to football. Rewind from the point at which I had flipped over. I mean, that's what happens. It really requires all your attention. And so, and I only say that to say that October is so busy because of that. There really isn't much of a break between football and baseball. A friend of mine asked me recently, when do you get a day off? And I said, after October is over and baseball is done. However, it's also great for business. We love the fact that there's so much traffic on our social media. There's so many people that are checking in. It's busy because the NHL and the NBA are also back, because MLS is taking place and we had the Ryder Cup earlier this month. There's always something going on in the month of October, thus the fulcrum. And we have still so much to do. But back to my point about liking to name and label different elements of the show, I thought we might call this Loser's Hour, which we could, except that coming up in 15 minutes, we'll have a guest from Arlington. No, not from Arlington. Sorry, from Houston, about the Rangers. They will be heading back to Arlington as they prepare for a World Series that will begin on Friday. But from Houston, a member of our Dallas affiliate, 105.3 The Fan, who is on the field and in the clubhouse, he will join us to set the stage, the atmosphere, really to make sure that we get the full story on these Rangers, the intel. Oh, producer Jay just said in my ear, because he's a live guest, it might be later in the hour. So at some point this hour, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Love to connect with you always. We still hear from people routinely every week who are finding the show for the first time, and that's awesome. We've also got a Monday MVP poll that still goes for another couple hours. That's an NFL-specific poll, but many of you are writing in Adolis Garcia or writing in other members of the NFL. And then we have just kind of a poll to gauge your reaction. Which team is more worthy of worry right now? Which team is in more of a pickle? Is it the San Francisco 49ers, who've dropped back-to-back games and Brock Purdy has not played well for stretches in each of these losses? Plus, they're without Deebo Samuel, right? They're missing pieces. Or is it the Buffalo Bills, who, speaking of missing pieces, they are as well. And their offense hasn't looked comfortable for the majority of the first 7 weeks. So that poll is also up. But the reason we're going to talk about the losers is because we have yet to hear from the Houston Astros. Did you see the report about Dusty Baker? According to The Athletic, Dusty has told members of the Astros front office that this is his last year as manager. And he did not want to make it public, because he didn't want to take away from what the Astros were attempting to do, which was to ultimately win back-to-back World Series for the first time since the turn of the century to have a team do that. And still, he's reluctant to talk about it, but you'll hear from Dusty directly. Again, the report from The Athletic is that he has told people inside the organization, as well as his own family and friends, that he is not managing past this season, that this will be his last season as a manager in Major League Baseball. He is 74 years old, although my mom's birthday is Tuesday, and she's still teaching almost full-time, and she's older than Dusty.
You sound like my mother.
So, yeah, he's 74, turned 74 this summer, and this is a grind. I mean, it's a grind to be on the road as much as they are, to travel as much as they do, 162 regular season games. And since he took over as the manager of the Astros, they've gone as deep as the World Series, or at the very least, the ALCS. He's the oldest active manager in baseball. Although Bochy now is into his 70s. No, let's see. No. Bochy is 68. So there's a few years between them. But Bochy, same place. But it's amazing how much winning can give you a lift. And Bochy talked about how he was sitting on his couch for 3 years before the Rangers brought him out of retirement. And gosh, what a fresh challenge and a new energy he seems to have, or, you know, he's kind of approaching it that way. So we'll hear from the Astros, including Dusty Baker. And then also we have to give you the Niners perspective, because they just dropped back-to-back games. So Kyle Shanahan, Brock Purdy, Christian McCaffrey. Again, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You can find us on Facebook or on our YouTube channel, as well as on Twitter. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. We'll try to work in some calls as well. But there was another baseball game that was taking place in Philadelphia. Gosh, now almost 12 hours old from first pitch. And it didn't take long beyond that first pitch for the Diamondbacks to get busy.
Into the full windup and the pitch. And a drive to left. And the Diamondbacks break on top on a home run by Tommy Pham. Here's the next one from Nolan. And a shot to left. And it's going to be 2-0 Diamondbacks. Back to back. Pham and Gurriel for the Diamondbacks here in the second inning.
That was almost a golf shot. This was a sinker. It was not the curveball. He went down and got it and still elevated that ball and just crushed that ball over the wall.
The call on Diamondbacks radio, Greg Schulte being the main play-by-play, and they gave some support to Merrill Kelly pretty quickly. Now, Kelly got into his own trouble in the first inning. He actually had to leave two Philly straight. So he had to get out of a jam in that first inning. And remember, the Phillies, they have ignited the crowd there at the bank, Citizens Bank Park, by some of their early home runs. Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper. We've seen the top of that lineup, Trey Turner, get those solo shots, those big home runs right away. But after Kelly manages to get out of a jam there in the first inning, the Diamondbacks plate three runs in the second. So, gosh, talk about a turnaround. That itself might have been the turning point of this game six. And Tommy Pham, he'd kind of been scuffling along as the DH. But he gets the solo home run off Aaron Nola. Now, Nola's start had been pushed back. And then Lourdes Gurriel, he did the same thing not long after. You can imagine what a lift it was for FAM, what a lift it was for the Diamondbacks to be able to strike first. Because once the Phillies get rolling, their hitting is contagious. But also that crowd there in Philadelphia, you know, that stadium, it can be full throat when they are playing well. And so this was such a huge deal for the Diamondbacks to get the first three runs across.
The pitch, swing, and that's a line drive down the right field line. Fair ball into the corner. Carroll powering towards third. It gets away from Castellanos. Carroll's going to score easily. Marte on his way to third, and it's an RBI triple. Diamondbacks extend their lead. It's now 4-1.
Once again, the call on Diamondbacks radio. So two RBI hits for Ketel Marte. And for the Phillies, it was a story that we haven't told about them recently, but they go 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position. Unable to extend or to expand their scoring opportunities. They couldn't get a rally together. And you got to give credit to Merrill Kelly. Now, he was taken out after 5 innings, though he'd given up just a run on 3 hits. He struck out 8, but ultimately, it was about the win, and so he was trusting Torey Lovello.
In that situation, obviously, NLCS Game 6, I want to be out there. I want to help my team win, and that's kind of my mentality. But we had a conversation after that inning. He kind of broke down why it was that he took me out and the reason behind it. And at the end of the day, I trust my bullpen. It's not about me not trusting who's coming in behind me. It's just me trusting myself, I think. But at the end of the day, the guys behind me came in and did a great job. And at the end of the day, if we win, then that's what matters.
All hands on deck. Anything is possible. Game sevens are game sevens for a reason. So we earned the right to play in that game. And I'm proud of the guys for that. So I want them to enjoy it. They're excited. But at some point tonight, we're going to probably turn the page and set our sights on their starting pitcher, set our sights on what our job is, and make sure we get a good night's rest. So I'm really proud of the boys, but I want them to celebrate. They're in a very good mood in that clubhouse right now.
I can imagine Torey Lovello doing his press conference as his Diamondbacks were not only feeling the joy of forcing a Game 7, but also probably some relief. It's after hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Similar to what I said about the Texas Rangers and their backs being against the wall, really any team that gets to this point has to be fairly comfortable facing adversity and facing the prospect of elimination. But for the Diamondbacks, they needed to fight scratch and claw just to get into the postseason, right? They were not sniffing the NL West title that was long gone to the Dodgers, and now the Dodgers are long gone. But the Diamondbacks were on the edge for quite a while. They were competing with teams, not so much the Phillies, because the Phillies had a fairly sizable lead atop the NL wild card, but they were competing with other teams to try to earn a wild card, like the Cubs, for instance, and some of the other teams that were really pushing the pedal to the metal down the end of the season. So for them, they've kind of been in this space where if we don't win, we're done. So this is not foreign to them at all. And in fact, Tommy Pham says it's good for them.
You can say when our backs are against the wall, it brings the best out of us. Guys tend to turn up the focus. And, it gives us a little edge. So maybe that's what we needed.
I do like the edge. The edge is significant this time of the year. Anything that can give you an edge or a leg up. As for the Phillies, you don't have to worry about the Phillies. They're also real comfortable when it comes to these types of situations, meaning the pressure cooker. But I am blown away hearing this. The Phillies, when they step on the field for Game 7 at their own stadium on Tuesday night, will play in the first ever Game 7 in franchise history. The Phillies have never played in a Game 7 before. How about that? Now, they played in winner-take-all games, Game 5s, but not in a Game 7. And you've got to be impressed with the fact that the Diamondbacks even forced one, considering how dominant the Phillies were in the first two games of this NLCS. But yeah, they weren't unable to extend a rally, to put together enough hits that they really could ever feel like they had some momentum.
First inning comes out, and he really executed everything. And even in the fourth inning, I thought it was a good inning. The second inning, he just didn't execute some pitches, and he paid for it. But we didn't score any runs.
So, yeah, partly the offense, but also Aaron Nola. He was all right, but he was spotty. And the fourth innings, where he was able to settle down a little bit, that second inning was the one in which he gave up the three runs and just couldn't sustain. Again, same thing for the offense. Couldn't sustain what it was that he was trying to do. So he allows four runs on six hits, has a couple of walks in there. But ultimately, the Phils go 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position. So it's both. Credit the Diamondbacks. Credit Merrill Kelly. Gosh, could you imagine? And I'm just throwing this out there. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I have no idea. In a game seven, anything can happen. But could you imagine if the Phillies lost after, first of all, on their own field, but also after everything that we've seen from them so far in October? Big, bad, bold, brash, loud. The onslaught from the hitters, the Bryce Harper, the Trey Turner, as I say, the Kyle Schwarber and how he's tattooing balls. My goodness, I can't even imagine if they fall short. People had them heading to the World Series after game two, no doubt. People were talking about sweeps. I mean, it's a completely different world now. And credit the Diamondbacks. That tenacity, that refusal to give up and go away. And the Phillies have got their hands full now. It doesn't matter if the game is at their home ballpark, though they certainly should have the benefit of a crowd that's lost its mind. And I mean, it's comforting. But the Diamondbacks are no longer intimidated, just like the Rangers were not. Okay, on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Jay, what's the call? We're going to wait until after the update at the bottom of the hour to welcome our guest. Again, covers the Rangers, part of their broadcast from our Dallas affiliate, 105.3 The Fan. So next, we will hear from some of the losers. We'll go Niners. We'll also work in some Astros. Thanks for hanging out with us. Our second show of the work week, but maybe your first. If you don't join us on Sunday nights, well, here you are on a Monday. Whew, the Monday hit me in the face. It's all right, though, because I got a lot of yard work done. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Kirk ready now, 1-2 pitch, ground ball, second base, Simeon's got it, on to first to Nate Lowe, and hello World Series! The Rangers have won their third American League pennant. They stream out of the dugout and are jumping up and down between the mound and first base. For the first time since 2011, the Rangers are going to the World Series after having six consecutive losing seasons. What an amazing year this has been. And there's more baseball to be played.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
On the official Texas Rangers radio network, Eric Nadel with the final call as they return to the World Series, and they do it in a game seven on the road in Houston. They've not yet lost on the road in this postseason run. Bruce Bochy never guided a team to a loss in a winner-take-all game, and now he's headed back to the World Series.
It's unreal. I mean, I'm pinching myself. It's hard to believe that this is really happening. I mean, 3 years out.
Let's face the facts. Everyone wants to feel valued, especially your employees. In fact, a 2023 study found 78% of business owners say benefits and retirement plans improve employee retention. Employees want to feel secure in their jobs and their finances. At Principal, we help you invest in your people. Because investing in your people is investing in your business. Learn more at principal.com/benefits. Products and services offered by member companies of the Principal Financial Group, Des Moines, Iowa. For important information, visit principal.com/disclosures.
I'm Kate Abdo, the host of Kicking It, a new weekly show from the CBS Sports Golasso Network, where Clint Dempsey, Charlie Davies, Mo Adu, and I connect with the biggest personalities from global soccer and beyond to learn about their journeys and what makes them tick. This is the place for football fans to hear unfiltered conversations with the game's most familiar faces. So what are you waiting for?
Follow and listen to Kicking It on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The all-electric Hyundai Ioniq 6 is sleek, full of advanced tech, and has a range of up to 360 miles. Any drawbacks? Yeah, every Ioniq 6 comes with a complimentary EV charger and up to $600 installation credit, so you're going to have to figure out something else to spend that money on. The all-electric Hyundai Ioniq 6. Hyundai, it's your journey.
EPA estimated 361-mile range for Ioniq 6 SE long-range rear-wheel drive with fully charged battery. Actual range varies based on trim and other factors. Actual charge time varies based on charging unit output, temperature, and other factors. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
I was sitting on that couch for 3 years and got the call from CY. Couldn't be more grateful to think I'm here in World Series. There's no words.
Congratulations to him on Bally Sports Southwest and to the Rangers. It's been a really neat story. Six consecutive years with losing seasons, but some of those were 100 plus losing seasons. And then to cough up that AL West title on the final day in a tiebreak to their hated intrastate rivals, the Houston Astros. Man, they've been living in their shadow for a while. This is how you get the last laugh. But as for the Astros themselves, seven consecutive ALCS appearances, multiple World Series. Dusty Baker, no way that you can minimize what they've accomplished.
We've been spoiled around here as far as just winning, winning, and winning. And, you know, heck, I've been here 4 years and we've been to two World Series and two championship seasons. You know, we have nothing to be ashamed of or nothing to hold our head on. Down about. I mean, we're down, you know, but we're not out. And every team damn near in baseball would trade, you know, to have the last 4 years that we've had.
It's tough. I mean, you're in this game to win, and we weren't able to do that. But, I mean, you know, the Rangers played a really good series. They have a really good ball club. So wish them all the best in the World Series. And, I mean, we had a good year, a lot of ups and downs throughout the season, but you know, we were able to make things work and, you know, at least have the opportunity to get there. So, it's a little tough.
Look, I mean, I'm not somebody to dwell on negatives. Obviously, we would have liked to have been able to get it done here, and there's no simple answer as to why we didn't play great at home. It just stinks. Obviously, would have liked to have had it gone different.
The voice of Justin Verlander after Kyle Tucker. So, yeah, you're going to hear that type of sentiment coming from a clubhouse where they're used to winning, right? This is not what they anticipated. They were planning on winning back-to-back World Series for the first time, you know, since the turn of the century in the Yankees, or at least getting back there. But I think the worst is the fact that after taking the lead in the ALCS, they then drop back-to-back games at home. I mean, that's stunning. For a team like the Astros. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. We had talked about this all throughout their run. Just four guys remaining from that 2017 championship. But two of them, Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, both with big time postseason moments, championship type moments. Altuve had another home run in this game, but obviously too little, too late. Why did the Astros fall short, though? How did they end up going 2-for-14 with runners in scoring position?
Baseball. You know, sometimes you're going to win, sometimes not. I think that's what happened. They play better than us.
That's a good point. The Rangers did, in fact, play better than the Astros in both games 6 and 7. On Twitter, After Hours CBS, on our Facebook page, we're looking forward to a conversation with Jared Sandler from our Dallas affiliate, 105.3 The Fan, part of the Rangers Radio Network, as they're back in the World Series. And I think a really cool story. They've been building toward this. Why was this the breakthrough season? We will ask Jared. And also, how did they turn into road warriors? So when the plane lands and when he is available, he will join us here After Hours. Paul is listening in Westfield, Massachusetts. Paul, welcome to After Hours.
Amy, I miss you. It's been months, and since you make up words, Croptober, baby. And I just literally picked and peeled and cooked my fresh tomatoes while my Croptober bud is hanging dry, and it's the aroma and the flavor, and the leaves are changing color. I literally am in heaven up here, you know.
Oh, yeah, we've got great fall colors in my neighborhood, too.
Yes, man, it's awesome. Hey, Amy, this is what I would consider a significantly historic matchup. You've got the Astros, basically was King Kong, and then Godzilla. Except this time, the Astros just couldn't out-bat Texas. Like you mentioned, the RBI record. I don't think that was a narrative that many people expected. And then, of course, the first time I saw Altuve, and imagine 7 in a row now, I remember laughing, thinking, there's me, you know, the funny guy in every Spanish movie, jumping for joy. It's Jose Altuve, just so full of joy. And watching what they did was awesome. And to think he's 5'6" in an age of giants. To put in terms of physics, for him to be able to smoke the ball at his height is very not probable against people like Aaron Judge. But it shows you, like with John Stockton in basketball, people like me, you know, Altuve's probably a once-in-a-generation player. His RBIs in that series at his age, what he's done at his height, he's in a whole category when you put in the physics, which is important. And it gives people a generation wanting to be like him. You know, it's just a great story and good for baseball. And then the other side there with Game 7, never at home, and them big-mouth motorheads running it and flapping it. You know, like Ric Flair said, you want to walk the walk, you better talk the talk. And hopefully they're not running the mouth with the checks and they can't cash.
Wait, are you sure it's not the opposite? When you want to talk the talk, you better walk the walk?
Well, I said it backwards. It's 3:30 in the morning. I've been in a hot tub for an hour. It's amazing I'm awake. But yeah, you're right. And Amy, the Patriots came back from the resurrection of the dead. Big Benny White up here at WCRN, the tall me, were walking the plank. They want to get rid of Belichick and Mac, and this brought back the reality that
so dumb.
Coach and Mac, if he has protection and receivers that actually catch the ball, he can actually play like he did his first year. A lot going on. It's too hot. We're dropping it like it's hot in Croptober. This is going to be great. And the Celtics and the hockey in Boston is awesome. Boston let up 7 goals in 5 games. Them 2 goalies are wicked. And although they retired Bergeron, that 19-year-old's doing a great job. That new front line is doing good, and our defense is awesome. I can't wait to see what happens this winter.
All right. Sounds like you're really excited. Thanks for sharing your enthusiasm.
Thank you.
All right, Paul. I can't compete with that, not on a Monday night. Whew. So whether or not you can match his enthusiasm, if you want to answer our question of who incites more worry at this point, is it Niners or is it Bills? Neither team has played the way that it's capable of in the last few weeks. The Bills seem to be scuffling. I would say their issues run a little deeper. Though the San Francisco 49ers have now had back-to-back games in which their quarterback has scuffled. So Brock Purdy throwing a pair of interceptions, as in two, on each of their last two possessions. They're only losing by 5, right? I mean, they've got a quick strike offense. They've got some big time playmakers. We know that. And yet he throws the ball away twice and gets picked off. So how come? Or, you know, what went wrong, I suppose, would be the question for Brock Purdy.
Just bad ball. JJ did a good job on his route. And D-line got a good push on us. And I sort of just was trying to anticipate the throw. At the end of the day, it was a bad ball, and obviously I threw it too far ahead of him, so yeah.
So that's about the game-sealing interception, both of them with Cam Bynum for the Minnesota Vikings. But Christian McCaffrey says, actually, it's my fault that we lost this game.
Anytime you lose, it's a bad feeling. I think we have a team that's hypercritical of each individual, and you know, we can't just let it trickle down, and got to take a good hard look in the mirror. I know I'll do that. I made a bad mistake today that I believe cost us the game if I don't fumble that ball, and so I'm put it on me and go from there.
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple moments that you could look at for the Niners. And you got to give the Vikings credit, right? So Jordan Addison wrestles the ball away from Chavarius Ward, turns it into a 60-yard touchdown right before half. To me, that was a massive shift. But also, they have to take advantage of the turnover from Christian McCaffrey early, though they did jump on top of the Niners right away, because when McCaffrey fumbles, the Vikings are able to go the distance and get Addison's first TD. But it is never on one guy, so it's never just on the quarterback or just on Christian McCaffrey. The defense has to bear some responsibility as well, because think about the number of yards that the Vikings racked up in this game. Kirk Cousins had nearly 400 yards passing. This without Justin Jefferson. But yeah, the Vikings, they were able to do a lot of damage on defense. They were 8 of 13, I'm sorry, against the Niners defense. They were 8 of 13 on third down. They only had 5 penalties. Each team only had 5 penalties, so relatively clean. But dominating time of possession, the Niners couldn't get the Vikings off the field. They had extended possessions, 10-plus minutes with the football. So a lot of ways that the Vikings were able to take advantage of the Niners' D. Neither team rushed particularly well, but we know that Kirk Cousins can throw the ball, like it or not. Now, I don't know if I'd agree with Troy Aikman that Kirk Cousins is a, did you say a top 5 quarterback?
10.
A top 10 quarterback. Huh. Maybe in a vacuum. Maybe in a vacuum. Maybe if all you're doing is chucking the ball. I mean, he's real smart, though. I think he has a lower ceiling than some of the other dynamic quarterbacks in the NFL, but that's just my opinion.
I'd have to go look through it. Unfortunately, there's a lot of bad quarterback play. So maybe.
True. Maybe this year.
He's definitely top 15 simply because there are that many bad quarterbacks. He's a quarterback. I've always said this, and this is a barometer for me. You can win with Kirk Cousins. You don't win because of Kirk Cousins. That, to me, is the difference between the quarterbacks that are the Patrick Mahomes, the Josh Allen. You win because you have those guys.
Are the Bills winning right now because of Josh Allen?
They have a chance every game that they play because of Josh Allen. That, to me, is the barometer of, you talk about a franchise. Joe Burrow. Those are guys that you win because they're there. You can win with Kirk Cousins, but you got to put a lot of pieces around him in the right spots.
Which they have.
And you're not going to win because of him. And there's not a lot of guys that could do that. They elevate. He's not the guy that elevates. Not in my mind.
All right. I like that analysis. I am not of the opinion that one guy can ever win you a football game, but I understand what you're saying. And the quarterback has the ball in his hands more than any other. Kirk Cousins can do some damage with the ball in his hands. And he's not got Adam Thielen anymore. He doesn't have Justin Jefferson. They've got new guys. Mm-hmm. Look how quickly he's developed a rapport with Jordan Addison. And also, you know, pivoting to Alexander Mattison, too, with the run game. No more Dalvin Cook. So they've changed a lot of pieces around him, and he's still hit 9 different targets in this game.
I understand, which is why he's a good, not great quarterback. It's not a knock. Like, there's not a lot of guys that are next level. You win because they're there. As soon as they put the uniform on, you have a different chance. You have a better chance than most of your opponents. There's not a lot of guys like that. Those are the guys that, to me, are the true franchise, the true, when you say top 5, top 10, like, that's where I'm looking at. Everything below that, you start to look in different levels. Guys that have the ability to possibly get. The potential is there. If everything's right around them. Like, and then you go through all the different steps. If he could just be better at this, or if he could take away the turnovers. Kirk Cousins is just a good, solid quarterback. He's not great. He's not bad. He's good and solid. Now, if you have a really good team around him, you can win a Super Bowl with him. If you don't, you won't.
All right, so just out of curiosity, and then we have to take a break because I've got some stuff to do, but does Brock Purdy fall in that same category?
To me, the jury's still out because it's only year 2. I would say if Brock Purdy can get to the point of really good and can win with him, then the 49ers will win a Super Bowl. He's striving to get to that level. I'll put it this way. If you put Kirk Cousins on the 49ers, do I think he would win the Super Bowl? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Mm. Because he's good enough with the rest of that talent that's around him? Absolutely. You put Kirk Cousins on the Chiefs, do I think they win? No, they don't. Mahomes elevates that club. They're better because he makes them better.
On Twitter, After Hours CBS, on our Facebook page too, which team is in more of a pickle? Is it the Niners or is it the Bills? We've had to push our guest. It's fine. He's live. We're not doing anything. Well, I think it's all earth shattering, but you may not. So we will wait for him at the top of the hour. But coming up next, well, there's good news and there's bad news, but we've got the coolest surprise for you. It was actually a surprise for me, and now I'm going to share it with you. Here's our latest sports update. Oh, it's such a cool surprise.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. It's a Touchdown Tuesday on After Hours.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the power line. Touchdown!
1 minute to beat 10. He's gone!
They throw in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Hey, the guy missed. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown! Feathers helping into the end zone. Touchdown!
To cast your vote for the TD of the week, head to @AfterHoursCBS on Twitter or give us a call at 855-212-4227. The Minnesota Vikings.
Cousins on 3rd and 6. Big blitz like Pete said. So Cousins fires over the middle and it is caught by Addison. 20-10. Touchdown! That time, Jordan Addison stole it from Tarvarius Ward, and it's a 60-yard touchdown, and the Vikings strike in the shadow of halftime, and they lead 16-7.
The New England Patriots.
Gesicki into the huddle. Douglas departs for New England, and Mike Wolfe aligned to the right inside of Devontae Parker. And meanwhile, Henry, Bourne, and Stevenson flex left before Jones summons Stevenson to the quarterback's right hip. A second and goal to go from the left hash one. Andrews over the football to snap it back. Jones has it. Looks to his right. Throws it to the right.
Got it! Touchdown!
He's got it!
Patriots! There he is! Mike Gesicki off the side of a milk carton. Catching the game winner.
The Pittsburgh Steelers.
The Steelers in a tie game. Line up with everything in tight. Pickett communicating the play. The lone setback is Najee Harris. Pickett steps in, hands it off. Najee into the end zone. Pittsburgh Steelers go-ahead touchdown.
The Iron Horse, Najee, goes into the end zone.
The Cleveland Browns.
Here we go.
Hudson and Harris, Browns from the one. This is the game. Out of the eye, they need the touchdown. Hunt and Harris, Walker. Gives to Kareem Hunt, pushing, touchdown! Kareem Hunt got it across the goal line!
Kareem Hunt, are the cardiac kids back? Kareem Hunt getting it over the goal line. The huge touchdown on fourth down. You knew you could run it at that point. It didn't matter, that was the last play.
I feel like if you score a game-winning touchdown in the final 30 seconds, you automatically qualify for TD of the week, even if it wasn't some impressive, acrobatic, individual feat of strength. And we've got a few game-winning touchdowns, which is pretty incredible. So we give you the one from Monday Night Football that wasn't a game winner, but it was a 60-yarder for Jordan Addison, who wrestles it away from Chevarius Ward. Gosh, right before half, is able to go the distance. Paul Allen on Vikings radio. And what a big moment that was heading into the halftime locker room for both teams, actually. Completely turned the tenor and the tone of that first half. The New England Patriots, they desperately needed a win. The Buffalo Bills had come all the way back to grab the lead at Gillette Stadium in the fourth quarter. But Mac Jones, who said he never lost faith in himself, he throws the game-winning touchdown to Mike Gesicki with 12 seconds to go. Bob Soucy and Scott Zolak on Patriots radio. Bill Hillgrove on Steelers radio. Najee Harris gets into the end zone. And like I talked about on our Sunday night show, I felt like the two touchdown drives orchestrated by Kenny Pickett in the fourth quarter. The Steelers against the Rams really showed maturity and that the offense is growing up, because as the quarterback goes, a lot of times that's how the offense goes. So definitely a big step forward for Kenny Pickett and a huge win for Mike Tomlin and the Steelers. And then Kareem Hunt, 39-38, the final score. Are you kidding me? 39-38. But the Browns, their radio network, Kareem Hunt with 15 seconds to go, finds pay dirt. And the Browns rally past the Colts. Although in that game, there were eight lead changes. Was it about who had the ball last? It's not something you generally say about either the Colts or the Browns. So you can vote for TD of the week. We now have, count them, one, two, three. Three polls running all at the same time from different stretches over the last 24 hours. So we still have our Monday MVP poll. For those of you who are angry at us that we did not select Myles Garrett, well, the Browns defense gave up 38 points. But now you have a chance to vote for TD of the week because that does feature a Cleveland Brown. So whether it's TD of the week, whether it's Monday MVP and you're late to the party, or if you just want to tell us which team is in a bigger pickle. Is it the Niners who, I don't know, maybe need to start looking for kickers? The rookie Jake Moody, it's one they drafted, but he's going through his own adversity. They're missing Deebo Samuel. He could be out a couple weeks. Brock Purdy has scuffled along these last couple games. The defense, at times, Kirk Cousins and the Vikings offense made that defense look middling, maudling and middling. So are the Niners in dire straits? Are they in a pickle? Or is it the Buffalo Bills, who just lost to New England, as we talked about? And even though they were able to come all the way back, their defense couldn't hold off the Patriots either. Ramondre Stevenson, he was really the key on that last drive before Gesicki gets the touchdown. And they've also had a turnover issue in a bunch of these games. By the way, Dawson Knox is out now for I'm not sure how long, but he's having surgery, so he's going to miss some time as well. Again, you can vote on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on my Twitter, A-Law Radio, plus on our Facebook page. Now, I mentioned we have a surprise for you. It's actually a surprise for me. Warriors PR reached out to producer Jay with an email today, and this was the link that was attached to the email.
This is Klay Thompson, four-time champion with the Golden State Warriors. You're listening to one of the best shows in America, After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
How about that?
After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
What a huge surprise. My thank you to Raymond, to Ray Ritter with Warriors PR. He said, we recently had our media day, and we always try to record a few station IDs for some of the national shows around the country. Since we're big fans of Amy and her show, we had Klay Thompson record this for you. Klay Thompson, he now knows After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So cool.
This episode is brought to you by FX's A Murder at the End of the World, starring Emma Corrin, Clive Owen, and Britt Marling. Emma plays Darby Hart, a sleuth and tech-savvy hacker. She joins an exclusive group invited to a retreat. When one of the guests is found dead, Darby must prove it was murder before the killer takes another life. FX's A Murder at the End of the World, now streaming only on Hulu.